Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is February 20th, 2020. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. I'm still in the Netherlands and enjoying it enormously. Check out our new My 21-2020 poster, this time addressed to the ladies and gentlemen, particularly the municipal officers of Coffeyville, Kansas. They put a family breadwinner holding down two jobs in jail at taxpayers' expense, so it's bad for the businesses he works for, it's bad for the family he supports, it's bad for the taxpayers. Everybody loses, and you avoid the real money issue, because if $65,000 per person is missing from the federal government, the problem that a family breadwinner has of not being able to pay all his medical bills because his kid gets leukemia and he has no health care insurance, the problem is not going to be solved by putting him in jail. He's not the problem. Events, March 21st, workshop in Basel, Switzerland with Thomas Meyer. And then we have three teas with Catherine in June on June 6th, Saturday. These are all Saturdays in Montreal. The following week, June 13th, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And then the following week, June 20th in Amarillo, Texas. And again, a big shout out to the subscribers who've helped us identify good locations. And I'm really looking forward. It's a great way to meet other people. And once you start hanging out with the Soleri Network and realize there are tons of people who know what's really going on and are great people and productive people and fun to be with, it's a whole new world. We have a new brochure for The Hang in August 2020. It's an incredible gathering. Ulrich, Jason, Boughton Smith, Thomas Meyer, Nina Hind, who writes Food for the Soul, Bridget Mouchet from the Wellness Series, Robert Duper from here in the Netherlands, and then my longstanding attorney who's an expert at deep state tactics, Carolyn Betts. It's limited to 20 subscribers, and our focus is on biophysics. If you want a copy of the brochure, you can link to the PDF that's on the Lake Constance Opera Hang website that you can link to right from the homepage. Or if you want us to mail you a copy, just send an email to hang2020@soleri.com or customerservice@soleri.com or askcatherine@soleri.com. Wrap-ups, the ESG Turn the Red Button Green mailed about 6 weeks ago. We still get occasionally subscribers who said they haven't received it. So if you were due as a premium digital and print subscriber to get a copy and it hasn't come through, let us know and we'll make sure it's sent out to you. Those have been much more popular than I expected, so we just ordered a whole new batch from the printer. State of Our Currency is coming next. I hope to have it to the printer this month and out to you in March. Wow, what a discussion. The longer I wait, the better it gets. Our theme tonight is the fog and fiction of war. If you're not familiar with the concept of the friction of war or the fog of war, definitely look it up. There's a great marine manual that describes it that I have back at home. It's not with me in the Netherlands, otherwise I would quote from it. We're getting reports from colleagues, from subscribers, from all around the world that there is increased difficulty. Great subscriber comment this week in subscriber input that his colleagues are having trouble focusing, and customers too. And there's no doubt as the change accelerates, technology accelerates, the adaptation of new technology accelerates, uncertainty accelerates, that it's easy to be more and more distracted by what's going on. And we're certainly feeling the fog of war, because you have enormous amounts of win-lose relationships going on and real energetic opposition. Add to that the distrust and the uncertainty, and you really can feel it. What it means is many functions take just much longer to do. You know, something that took an hour 10 years ago suddenly now takes 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes it takes all day. It's one of the reasons I stopped doing the individual investment advisory. I simply needed more time to handle the sort of implosion and things that can go wrong in the process. Now, the thing that makes it most difficult in many different areas is what I call the multiple personality disorder that comes out of the red button problem. We say we're doing one thing, we're doing another. We have so much secrecy, so much propaganda and lies. You know, people, the hubris and the hypocrisy just goes off the charts. And I just wanted to mention a number of different situations that you're looking at. First of all, there was an open letter from 2000 Department of Justice alums demanding that Attorney General Barr resign over the Roger Stone sentencing memo. One of the signatories was an attorney who tried repeatedly to falsify allegations against us during the Hamilton litigation. I tell the story during Deep State Tactics, and I was on the Power Hour this week and told the story on the Power Hour. It's extraordinary that somebody who had broken as many laws as I've watched this person break would have the temerity to sign something demanding Attorney General Barr resign over something that wasn't breaking the law. Now step back and look at all the things that have happened at the Department of Justice over the years that these 2,000 people were working there. We had the Department of Justice and CIA sign a memorandum of understanding to protect people or institutions or organizations dealing drugs for the CIA, and basically telling the CIA that as long as it wasn't a case officer, they were free to deal drugs or do business with drug dealers. You have the Department of Defense and DOJ memorandum of understanding to test non-lethal weapons on U.S. citizens. So we have all sorts of electronic harassment and other bizarre prototyping, many times on innocent people. We have the short history of the DOJ and 21 Tran going missing, you know, and the housing bubble, which involved massive amounts of crime instituted and implemented by Department of Justice attorneys, including getting the honest people forced out of HUD. We have $1 trillion a year of money laundering that's happening. It could only happen if the Department of Justice was helping it happen, along with the New York Fed member banks. I told the story of a staff person in the Appropriations Subcommittee, the chief of staff to the chairman of the HUD Appropriations Subcommittee, saying that HUD was being run as a criminal enterprise. Well, it can't run as a criminal enterprise unless the Department of Justice helps it to run as a criminal enterprise. And then, of course, there is the story of the asset forfeiture fund and all the criminality that's occurred, you know, and sort of Sheriff of Nottingham behavior that's come from many, many decades of reengineering civil money and criminal money penalties and forfeitures so that basically you could, you know, the government could make money destroying communities, destroying neighborhoods. Yeah, targeting drug dealers too, but, you know, some of those drug dealers were working for them. So the question is, why are we wasting the time and money of 2,000 alums who had no objection to any of those things and have been as quiet as Bo Peep while all that's going on, but suddenly when they try and prosecute arguably one of the world's worst swamp critters, all of a sudden it's a big problem. Now, if you look at the prosecution, it was a little bit like getting Al Capone for taxes. So I'm not saying that the prosecution was fair, but if you look at all the laws that Roger Stone has probably broken in his life, and at least the laws he broke that when I was, you know, watching him in action, you just can't believe that we're having this conversation. And now we see the evangelicals, people like Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, you know, arguing on behalf of Roger Stone, and it's, you almost wonder who's zooming whom. Benjamin Fulford came out this week and said that Jones was being paid $35 million a year by Lockheed Martin Skunk Works to run his operation, and all I could think was, well, maybe that explains it. But you can't imagine that one of the great swamp critters of all time is being put forward as some kind of savior and whistleblower, or that we're wasting this much time in the country defending him when you have incredible people like Assange or Ross Ulbricht sitting in prison. Okay, so that was number one. Number two, Grassley of Iowa comes out, senator from Iowa, known for financial management responsibility, and announces legislation to amend the CFO Act in an act of financial responsibility. Not one word about FASB 56 and my, or the $21 trillion missing, and I'll bet you, you know, if we drill down and what he ends up filing, it's going to be to help improve the implementation of FASB 56. But they'll be able to say they're doing something to make financial management and the federal government more responsible. Oh, yeah, right. Number three, we see testimony on the Clinton Foundation in Congress, and it was the multiple personality disorder in full glory. Congress wanted the whistleblowers to give them all their documents, which represents a multi-year investment, significant. And if I were their attorney, I would have done what their attorney did, which is in a million years, I wouldn't give them all my documents. Let them go do the work. And I'll bet you a dollar the point of getting the documents was to help protect the Clintons and everybody else who's getting kickbacks, because I think you have both sides of the aisle deep up to their eyeballs in kickbacks from the Clinton operation. Then finally, number four, Trump pardons, he goes to a fundraiser in, I think it was in Palm Beach, that was $580,000 per couple. Then he follows that dinner with pardons of a variety of people who were promoted by some of the folks at that dinner, including Mike Milken, a very popular pardon on Wall Street. No pardons of Ross Ulbricht, no pardons of Julian Assange. It's definitely a feeling of pay to play. The next example, unbelievable. Mike Bloomberg was a video of Mike Bloomberg talking about how easy it was to be a farmer. Got passed around, of course. I went nuts. He was basically saying you put a seed in the ground, you cover it with soil, anybody can do it. I can show you how to do it. So I tweeted out, actually, the skill sets are print fiat currency, manipulate federal credit, engineer financial coup by criminal financial fraud, and pretend you don't know about the drug dealing, pedophilia, and mind control, why you launder the money. I could teach anybody how to do it. Here's the thing. I keep saying those who win in a rig game get stupid. And the problem with folks like Bloomberg, who's very hardworking, very talented, is he has been so protected and so oversubsidized by this federal credit game and the syndicates he play with that he has no understanding of how the economy really works, let alone how complex and difficult it is to be a farmer. There's another video where he says we need to cut Medicare and Social Security, but not one word about $21 trillion missing from the federal government or any of the skims of the Social Security Trust Fund with currency debasement, and then this game with interest rates and interest rates swaps. So he's clueless and doesn't understand his hubris. And so I think one of the things that gives a real sense of incoherence and multiple personality disorder is we're watching a much more increased transparency about how ignorant we are of each other and of each other's worlds. There's a real, again, multiple personality disorder. I'll never forget the first time I saw Macron speaking with the Yellow Jackets. It was in the beginning of the Yellow Jacket movement. And he was out on the street and talking with them sincerely, to his credit. And they were looking at him with absolute horror because it was dawning on him that he had no idea how the economy works. You know, he had these simplistic pictures in his head, like people, you know, who go quickly up the investment banking curve as I did. I was one of those people. You know, they really don't know. Now, I have to give Macron credit because he really tries to learn and communicate, and it's painful to watch, but at least he's trying. He's one of the few who's banged the drum about the, we have to face the fact that the failure of the, you know, in the West has come from the West, and the West needs to pull itself out and start leading again. And I'll discuss that more when we get to the Munich Security Conference. But we're not seeing a lot of people like that who are at least struggling to try and break out of their bell jar. And that's why, you know, we all to a certain extent live in a bell jar. And that's why it's so important to do everything you can to break out of your own and listen to other authentic and legitimate points of view. I recognize that there are a lot of other points of views that are inauthentic and not worth listening to. This kind of multiple personality disorder is what happens with secrecy. There's way too much secrecy, there's way too much propaganda, there's way too much mind control, and we're beginning to really see the blowback from that because it cuts us off from the intelligence we need to be productive. One of the great things about free markets is the speed at which intelligence that we, feedback that we need to, you know, if we're not productive, get productive, is a wonderful thing and really helps us get on course. So we need to get and stay as productive as possible, as quickly as possible. So a lot of people are so far off sides, you know, that we are as a group in real danger. But what you and I need to do is just keep turtling through. And it's not just massive uncertainty, but massive naivete and hypocrisy on all sides. It's very hard to watch Michael Bloomberg sort of step in it again and again and think, how can a guy that smart be that stupid? We have to find a way to enjoy the challenge. So I don't know any way to do it other than go to a much higher mind and constantly look for ways to jump the curve. And it's funny because, you know, when I'm scanning the what's going on in the world for money and markets, it's really it's really hard to stay in that higher mind. But at least, you know, I have little messages around reminding me to do it. So as much as possible, commensurate with family obligations, we all have family obligations, we have to let go of people who refuse to be productive in this environment. You have to just please. And if you haven't taken a look at our sort of coming clean opus, that's what you need to do, because there's nothing like coming clean to help you go fast, jump the curve, and stay in a higher mind in this environment. Money and markets. I'm working with a Wednesday close because I'm here in Europe. Again, total returns year to date. US dollar index relatively flying. We're up 3.41% for the year. It's why I have such a hard time believing the theory that coronavirus was an accident from the Wuhan lab. It's way too miraculous what's happening with the dollar in the US stock market, considering where we were on December 31st. The Wuhan lab accident theory would make much more sense if you were not watching the financial patterns up close. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, so much of my map of the world is discerned from watching the financial patterns. It's one of the things that is always getting me off sides, interestingly enough, with many of the financial people. Fixed income flying in the treasury market. TLT up 7.6% for the year after last year's performance. It's a miracle. Intermediate up 3.08%, the bond aggregate up 2.03%, and junk up 0.89 basis points, almost 1%, which is, given the rollovers and problems in the corporate bond market, is pretty respectable. But what the junk price say to me is the Fed Treasury can clearly manage the shredding of oil and gas defaults in the high yield markets this year. Sweden throws in the towel on negative interest rates after 5 years. Ugh, God, how to kill a country. It was interesting in the Financial Times article, on a very good Financial Times piece covering the whole issue. They quoted research published by two Princeton University economists who said, are you ready for this? They found that many of the benefits of negative rates are front-loaded, such as gains in asset prices on bank balance sheets, while the corrosive side effects last longer. No blankety blank. Really? So, you know, you look at this and you want to shake your heads. We are living through a tsunami of corrosive side effects from the last 50 actions by the fiat currency crowd. And you can't believe these guys can say this with a straight face. Really? Really, do you think? As the German finance minister said, quote, the debt growth model is over. There are no reforms that are not real reforms. So we can keep doing with the fiat currency steroids, but, you know, the chickens are home to roost. There was a great chart that Zero Hedge put up on the fact that the debt was more expensive than the GDP, or, you know, the benefits you were getting from the reinvestment of the proceeds. So I put a link up to it, but it's an excellent example, sort of at the macroeconomic level, of what I keep talking about negative return on investment government budgets. S&P having a great year. What a coincidence. Up 5.12% so far for the year. Homebuilders up 7.49%. The VGK, the European ETF, flat for the year. It's down 2 basis points. The Germany up 34 basis points. The developed markets minus North America down 65 basis points. What a surprise. China stock market large cap down 2.66%. Small cap down 25 basis points. Emerging markets down 1.43%. Commodities down 6.45%. That whole world in a sea of minor red ink, which is incredible because if you look at the stimulus China's been delivering, it shows you how much pain there is. Gold up 6.22%, so better than the S&P, but not quite as good as the home builders. And silver now in the positive zone, up 3.3%. Oil's improved a little bit. It's down 14.96%, not quite as last year, but delivering quite a loss of revenues to all those different oil producers who are trying to de-dollarize. you're really seeing the world separate between the oil producers and China, so the de-dollarization crowd against the G7 control grid. Who would have thought that Western civilization would depend on the electrification of everything to destroy Western civilization? And I just keep thinking, who's zooming whom? A lot more about that in the state of our currency. Top stories, of course, coronavirus. I don't have a lot to add from last week. If you haven't listened to last week's Money and Market, you may want to listen to the part on coronavirus. I still think there's about a 95% chance it's biowarfare and 80% chance it's intentional. In other words, it's not an accident. I posted another video from Dr. Francis Boyle, who believes it's an accident coming out of the Wuhan laboratory. That would seem very logical, but given the financial patterns in the dollar and the other financial patterns, it's just too coinky dinky for me. So to me, it looks intentional. If the goal is to protect the dollar and to set the renminbi back by years, this operation is doing so far an excellent job. China's going to need their currency for domestic income subsidy and liquidity, not foreign liquidity. So this is going to soak up a lot of their currency need internally, or their currency capacity. I will say this, the cruelty that you see towards the Chinese people in the media and social media in the West, it's almost, in my opinion, it's too much to bear, given the suffering of what the Chinese people are suffering. So if this is intentional bio warfare or chemical warfare, it's a perfect example of the shriek-o-meter projective identification attacking, do something that attacks somebody and then you blame them for it and attack them a second time. It's the real 1-2 punch. And it's going to make the Chinese throughout, three Wall Street Journal reporters, based on a editorial towards China that was, given what's probably going on, a pretty mean piece. So that's going to make retaliation when it comes even meaner, because the shriek-o-meter can be very, very cruel in situations like this. If there's anything you can do to help reduce the meanness, you want to try and do it, because empathy is what we need. Okay, so the coronavirus situation is going to have numerous impacts on all of us. To me, the big risk here is the vaccine. As I talked about last week, beware vaccines and the vaccine mandate. A lot is being done to push vaccine mandates around the world and to get them through while the sort of the noise on the coronavirus is taking up the space. Food, there continues to be real struggles centralizing the food system that I believe are related. Economic slowdown, if China does drop to a zero or negative growth for this year on their GDP, there's going to be wide slowdowns. And slowdowns from people being afraid. There's a lot that's happening that's eroding trust globally. And so the more we get in a win-lose position with each other, the reverberations of the slowdown are not just from the virus, but from the sort of the squabbling that happens as the economy slows down. Pharmaceuticals, the globe is very dependent on Chinese ingredients. So if you are dependent on any kind of pharmaceuticals, you need to make sure that there are high quality ingredients, and you may need to make sure you have plenty of inventory. Retaliation, I have no idea what the Chinese might do. If they determine that this is aggressive warfare or intentional in any way, they're going to retaliate. The question is when and how. It's hard to say. I think there's little chance of the coronavirus causing more than a bad flu globally, but I could be wrong. There's always a chance that this could really spread and be very devastating for elderly or people who are already have medical conditions or chronic illness. But I'm much more worried about the biowarfare that's hitting us daily as we speak than the biowarfare that may spread out of China. China has a real pickle, as I described last week, with its banks, and the impact of the quarantine is going to make that much tougher to manage. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the Chinese manage their financial system and economy in the face of the existing leverage. And that's why I say they may need their currency for domestic subsidy instead of trying to keep liquefying it globally. Dr. Farrell has had several good pieces on the Chinese currency woes, including the dangers that the paper currency is being used to spread some kind of biowarfare. It's interesting, the Chinese were expected to come out with a cryptocurrency right about this time, and oops, it got interrupted. But there's no doubt what you're seeing in the numbers from the quarantine is China is, this is really helping digital cash and online shopping. This is getting people, you know, staying at home and shopping from a computer. Hong Kong woes, the coronavirus, I think, economically is hitting Hong Kong very hard. Hong Kong has always been a place with tremendous amounts of global talent from all over the world, doing business with people all over the world. And the coronavirus on top of the protests is really causing a lot of people to think about, okay, do I want to be in Hong Kong? So a real danger of global talent leaving. We see Carlson this week, Tucker Carlson, come out with a real witch hunt piece on the head of investment at CalPERS for investing, you know, a fair amount of money, I think it was $3 billion plus in Chinese companies, and some of that money working its way into the Chinese defense industry. And you can tell that this is all part of sort of separating the Chinese economy and the U.S. economy. I think there's a real divorce going on, and it's clear it's going to accelerate. Global security, the Munich Security Conference just took place. We saw Lavrov give a very interesting speech worth watching about the fact that we've got to get out of a win-lose position and the dangers of what NATO and the United States are doing versus, you know, forcing Russia into a win-lose position. More indications about the importance and the role in space. George Friedman had a good piece, is subscriber only, unfortunately, about the shift to space and more understanding of the role and importance of space. One of the things that happened, you see Macron talking about Europe can't wait for the United States. It's got to go its own way if it wants to reassert the power and effectiveness of the West. Lavrov referred to the crisis of trust. And what's interesting is the crisis of trust is not only between national players. There's a lot of crisis of trust in terms of lots of institutions globally. One of the problems is we're watching institutions. So if you look at the health space, between the CDC, the WHO, all these other institutions, there's so much lying in wolf that the time is going to come when we're going to need these institutions and nobody's going to trust them as far as they can throw them. So we're wasting a lot of credibility and the day is going to come when we need it. It's going to be very interesting to see whether Europe sticks with the U.S. or goes its own way. Right now, this week, they're struggling to put together the first budget without the U.K. That's a big, you know, with the U.K. out of that budget, it's a big job to kind of rejigger the budget, let alone integrate a vision of how to kind of jump the curve and have Europe lead the way. One of the things I keep hearing all week long is, oh, there's no more law, it's over, it's hopeless, blah, 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 blah. I want to emphasize again something I've said several times in the last couple of weeks, but I'm going to say it again. The law is a spiritual and cultural covenant. The elites and their institutions, any institutions, do not have the power to destroy it. They can do great damage, but if you look at the general population, there are tons of us. It's what the poet said, ye are many, they are few. You cannot destroy the law as a spiritual or cultural covenant if we don't let them. Now, I know with fiat currency and secrecy, you can do lots of damage, but we decide whether there's going to be law or not because we control the spiritual and covenant and cultural covenant. So don't let anybody talk you out of letting that go because it's all to our vested interest if we can find a way to reassert the law. Global slowdown, both the coronavirus and efforts to centrally control the food system are doing tremendous damage to the economy. But we're getting slowing because of demographics too. We've got a globally an aging population. China has that problem. Europe has that problem. The United States has that problem. And of course, we see so much positioning in terms of win-lose over the fight for global resources that a combination of all those things are making it much more difficult to optimize. Part of that is the currency issue. The dollar is being used to control as opposed to help people trade and optimize as they need to. Many signs of the slowdown popping out all over the place. HSBC cut 35,000 jobs. Their earnings are weighed down because of both negative interest rates in Europe as well as slowdown in Asia and all the different things going on. We see shipping companies and shipping indexes clearly hurt by the coronavirus. And then, of course, we have the war on farmers and the war on fossil fuel. So many different things causing people real economic pain. It was a very bad month for, there's a group that some call the Khazarian Mafia. If you go back to my discussion of the Forrestal assassination, it was really, to me, a partnership of two groups that were really part of setting up the national security state, the organized crime interests coming out of the, or associated with the Irgun group that was so adamant about setting up Israel, and then the Dulles Rockefeller faction. If you look at the first side, that syndicate has really taken a lot of hits recently. Let me just give you a rundown. We had Wexner of Victoria's Secret stepping down. I've always believed that he was one of the key leaders in that syndicate. He's been, obviously he got hit by the Epstein bad press and debacle, and now he's turning over control of Victoria's Secret, turning it over to a private equity. The syndicate wants to protect their winnings. Richard Sackler, the chairman of Purdue Pharmaceuticals, was really hit by the pharmacist documentary. More on that next week. Of course, Blankfein and Cohen are out at Goldman, and now the FT Financial Times did a big dish on Goldman this week. Netanyahu goes to trial on March 17th. He gave up trying to get immunity. That's going to be 2 weeks after the Israeli elections. We'll see what happens if he stands trial as no longer the prime minister. He has to give up all his other portfolios, but he doesn't have to give up the PM. I tweeted out, he's not going to trial for false flags, terrorism, or hacking elections, or assassinations, what some would see as a minor corruption charge. But he's tweeting out as though he runs the world, and bragged about rewriting the U.S. legal system, and makes it sound like foreign interference is fine in the American process, as long as the Israelis are doing it, not the Russians. Then, of course, Weinstein is in, or Epstein bad press continues. So what's the basis of Netanyahu's incredible enthusiasm? Makes it sound like the, you know, that network is taking over the U.S. IT and cybersecurity systems, and I think they're winning big time. And you sort of wonder, okay, well, what does that have to do with the coronavirus? It's certainly, I think, the Trump squeeze has been very good for them. Currency, I continue to work on state of our currency, and I've become increasingly convinced that part of the next phase of rolling out digital currencies is to sort of digitize the world and get the West on a digital smart grid. That's the infrastructure for both currency and energy and mind control. And it's a way of denying income to the oil producers who are de-dollarizing. So it's a one sort of way of looking at the world is it's dividing between the oil producers plus the Chinese who are de-dollarizing versus the dollar and Western interests that are trying to protect their position now that they can't depend on the petrodollar by switching to the smart control grid. And of course, that lets them roll out very, very cheap energy, which is an extraordinary boon for productivity. And of course, that depends as well on space. Julius Baer, the very prestigious Swiss bank, announced this week at the beginning of the week that they're launching a digital asset trading and custodial service. One of the big stoppers for many people in cryptocurrencies is finding a custodian they trust. And if you could get someone like Julius Baer doing it for you, you know, it completely changes the market. The Swiss regulators swooped in 2 days later and announced that they are investigating Julius Baer for money laundering. What a coincidence. You can see the regulators are really frustrated here. China was about to launch their cryptocurrency, and you wonder if it got held up by the coronavirus. We'll see what happens. The U.S. Secretary announces significant cryptocurrency regulations on the way, warning, warning. And the IRS is now inviting cryptocurrency firms to Washington for a summit in March. I continue to keep an eye on the BIS task force. But there's no doubt to me, it looks like you got two sides, Mr. Globals on both sides, playing them against each other. And of course, I think the goal is not to de-dollarize. I think the goal is to get a global digital currency. And my big fear is, you know, about the vaccines and other things going on with biowarfare is there. What they want to do is they want to get brain-to-machine interfaces in people's bodies. And there you have it. The Economist a couple weeks ago had a horrible piece on housing. Basically, they said, you know, the West is blundered by putting way too much capital in housing. I agree totally. They said the problem is home ownership. No, the problem is not home ownership. The problem is fraud. So, you know, it's funny, when the Economist gets it wrong, they really get it wrong. And given how much money has been pulled out of that market with fraud, I don't think that's an accident. Shame on you. UK post-Brexit is struggling. As I said, the EU is struggling with their first budget without the UK, and Johnson is reshuffling his cabinet. I'm very interested to talk to Dr. Farrell to see how it all sorts out. You know, he went to Oxford with Boris, so I'm sure he'll have a lot of comments on this. Our hero next week is going to be in Oxford, Don. It's a story this week who had to deal as the bursar with protests by Oxford students against climate change. They wanted the Oxford to divest of their fossil fuel stocks. I think it was BP. And the Oxford Don said he didn't have the power to do that, but he could turn off the heat. They thought that was a very bad idea and were very upset. Kind of love it. Finally, I want to do this in the top stories because I think it's important. We had a wonderful subscriber post on Trainment. I want to read it to you because I continue to pound the drums. If you transact online or if you transact by phone, you need to understand that this technology exists and you need to listen to the Solera report I've done with Adam Trombley on Trainment. You need to listen to some of the TrueStream videos, particularly their Minds of Men. You need to know this stuff exists, and it's being used to make money from you or entrap you. So let me just read this. I'm a new subscriber now, acquainting myself with your core concepts, and just have to thank you for this wealth of actionable intelligence. I must share an aha moment with you. Several months ago, I made a substantial physical gold purchase, and while on the phone doing so, could not explain my ebullience and why I stopped doing my due diligence and impulsively proceeded with a purchase without having slept on it. This was so unlike myself, and yet I felt absolutely joyful about it. Sometime after the sale, I took a clear left-brain look at the completed transaction and was sickened to see that I had agreed to a 42% markup. Okay, so a markup on a precious metals, legitimate precious metals transaction should be anywhere from 1% to 5%, depending on sort of market conditions and what you're buying. I've since taken legal action to recoup as much of my loss as can be negotiated. Fast forward to today, I just listened to your Solera report with Adam Trombley, and you make clear that entrainment can be added to the phone line. I have no doubt that this is what happened. In fact, it explains why there's now class action lawsuits against this particular gold dealer. Surely they are using entrainment subliminally on every call. Catherine, thank you for educating me. I'll be ever so more careful with future financial transactions, and knowing this information has restored some of my shaken self-confidence. For a while, I thought I had lost my grip. You need to know if you're going to buy something online or if you're going to buy something by phone that this is a possibility, and you need to protect yourself accordingly. Math is a wonderful tool. You have to use it. And if you're feeling way too good, then you need to not make a decision or transact at that time. The other thing is, you know, online gambling, online porn, this stuff is being used to transact you in this, I mean, to entrap you, and this technology is being used to entrap you, and you need to make sure your family and friends are warned, and just knowing it exists can make a huge difference. Our hero this week is Peter Bregan, a wonderful psychiatrist. I discovered him through TrueStream and the Minds of Men. They've done other interviews with him. The Scientologists, if you ask them about psychiatry, will talk about this huge conspiracy by the bankers to basically learn how to control our minds and implement global mind control. And it sounds completely ridiculous, but the more you look at what's going on in psychiatry, the more I'm convinced it's really true, even though their presentation leaves much to be desired. If you look at Bregan's history of trying to stop outrageous behavior by the psychiatric community. It's incredibly courageous, fearless. It's made a huge difference. If you want to understand the other side of the equation, watch The Pharmacist and then watch the deposition of Richard Sackler, who engineered the OxyContin opioid epidemic. There's a reason that all the fraud money from, or a lot of the fraud money from Madoff and Epstein went to MIT and Harvard brain research. And that's very much the psychiatric community working hard to, and the scientific community, to figure out how to take, you know, what they're learning about mind control in psychiatry and take it society-wide at low cost. It's one of the reasons I'm so concerned about the Charles Lieber type nanotechnology with the brain-machine interface. What, you know, these syndicates have had Harvard and MIT do in terms of research, you know, and I'm sure the U.S. intelligence agencies and DARPA as well, is pretty frightening. One of our subscribers has done a better job of describing Dr. Breggin than I have, so I thought I would read it. Hi, Catherine. I'm very surprised you know of and selected Dr. Breggin as Hero of the Week. I couldn't agree more. I'm reading his book, Psych Drug Withdrawal, because my 33-year-old brilliant-minded son is caught up in the system and they won't discharge him, meaning he has to take all meds they dispense to him. It's been going on and off for 7 years. It's a long, horrible story, and they don't care what families have to say. The entire system is sick, more sick than they claim our children are. I can't tell you enough how it has disturbed me. We are praying that the new doctor will discharge him in a year at best. He lives with me now, but under the state, so he has to take those dangerous meds. I pray every day that God will preserve his brain. God bless you, Catherine, for choosing Dr. Breggin and bringing him out in the open. And thank you, Catherine, for being another great hero of mine and many more. Well, thank you for those very kind words. I would point out Dr. Jordan Peterson had to withdraw from medication he'd been given to help him with depression, and he ended up having to go to Russia to get off of it. And getting hooked into this system, particularly in the United States, I think is very, very dangerous. Remember, these guys ultimately work back to a syndicate. It's exactly what I talked about when I talked about Yellowstone. The Beck brothers are a problem, and the big issue we've got for 2020 and the years ahead is, you know, what are we going to do about the Beck brothers? So, you know, the Beck brothers are the players who use the dirtiest tricks, and they've been getting away with murder since 1947, since we created the National Security Act. They're a problem, and if anything, they got the bit in their teeth. So we're going to have to decide how we take care of the Beck brothers, and this issue that Dr. Breggin is going after is right at the heart of the matter. Our Blast from the Past is an article I wrote in 2008, the Housing and Economic Recovery Act of 2008. I was doing a show on KPF radio in Berkeley where I was talking about all the abuses coming out of the housing bubble, and I got thrown off of KPFA radio right before the Bohemian Grove would have approved their nationalization of Freddie and Fannie. What a coincidence! One of the top investors in San Francisco came out shortly thereafter. It turned out they had lost $1 billion on a purchase of Fannie Mae stock they had made only several months before in April, and you couldn't believe it. And it was a very elegant letter they posted on their website, and they said, "We did very thorough due diligence. We had no idea there was a problem." I said, "Wait a minute, the former Assistant Secretary of Housing was on drive-by radio, you know, every other week in the San Francisco Bay Area talking for years about the fraud. What do you mean you didn't know there was a problem? Every trucker I know knew there was a problem." Anyway, it was the article in which I announced that it was easier to learn how to build your own house than deal with a mortgage finance system. And so it seemed an appropriate blast from the past in coordination with our wonderful interview this week. Marie McDonald on servicing. If you're at all concerned about servicing of your mortgage, you definitely want to listen to it. Let's go to the movie. I recommend watching The Biggest Little Farm. It's about a filmmaker and his wife, who was a chef, who decided to get out of Los Angeles and start a farm outside of Los Angeles, Apricot Lane Farm in Moore Park, California. And because John Chester, the husband, was a filmmaker, he does a remarkable job of sort of filming their experience. If you've never tried to garden or farm, then you don't know how hard it is. But this documentary will make it clear to you how very, very hard it is. But it can also, living with life in this kind of intimate way can be very fun and very inspiring. And it's fun to watch. It's a sweet and very interesting documentary. Our interview this week is with the wonderful Marie McDonald. She joined me last year to help you learn how to successfully originate a mortgage. Now we're coming back to talk about how to make sure you protect yourself from servicing fraud. You could have originated a mortgage perfectly and everything be fine. Then the mortgage gets sold. You end up with a new servicer. You can end up with a series of new servicers and run into a situation where the servicer can make more money from tricking you into a default than on just honestly serving your mortgages. Marie sort of provided, along with the interview, a wealth of documentation. We've got an outline that lists all the different servicing abuses with actual case studies. She's experienced helping people in all these different situations, and then it shows mortgage servicing abuse in escrow accounts. She's got a flow chart. She's got a document custodian checklist, glossary of terms, and also even sample call correspondence and payment logs. So if you have any reason to be concerned about servicing, or you're about to originate a mortgage and you need to understand what you're going to have to do on the back end to make sure it goes right, this is an outstanding and very thorough treatment of the topic, and you will be well served and well protected by having access to this information. So I hope you enjoy it. This is real actionable intelligence. Okay, Ask Catherine, thank you for all the great links. You've been emailing great links and putting them in subscriber input. I really, really appreciate it. Hi, Catherine. I'm a subscriber at Solaria and wanted to share a story that is of major national security and energy security significance. We'll be interested to hear your thoughts on this. There has been very little national news coverage about this issue, despite the national and really global when oil prices considered ramifications. Two companies, Waste Control Specialist, Interim Storage Partners, and Holtec International, are in the process of permitting to store 210,000 metric tons of high-level nuclear waste at two locations right in the heart of the Permian Basin, the U.S. largest onshore oil basin. I've attached a letter to President Trump that we've written and are circulating to get signatures and get this stopped. More details and a location map are included in the PDF. But key points are that the casks of spent fuel will be transported across the country from the East Coast through major cities and then stored only partially buried, so exposed to the surface in an area with high winds and dust storms. A terrorist attack could easily cause a Chernobyl-sized event and contaminate areas within a 50-mile radius of the sites, an area which happens to include a high percentage of the shale wells and oil wells in general in the Permian. Putting the nation's energy security at risk by storing nuclear waste in the middle of a massive oil reservoir seems so ludicrous that I suspect something more sinister. What better way to destroy both the oil and gas and nuclear industries by staging a false flag attack on nuclear storage facilities in the middle of the Permian Basin? What a great way to seize more assets land, which, as Dr. Farrell said, desert land will be of high value for beaming microwave energy down from space and the oil reserves themselves. I can imagine the deep-pocketed major oil companies being the only ones with the resources to produce oil from a radioactive area, probably with robots. The majors pulled out of the Permian decades ago before the shale boom, thinking the basin was done for. After the shale boom, they had to buy their way back in bit by bit. Much easier to employ the just do it method and take it. Other angles could include manipulation of oil prices. The Permian provides an inconvenient, freer market supply of oil that lessens OPEC and the Anglo-American Alliance's ability to manipulate oil prices. An oil shock these days causes a shale drilling spree, and new supply comes from immediately mitigating the price increase. Look how little impact the Saudi refinery drone strike had. Perhaps that was a test of the resilience of the oil markets. Perhaps once fusion power is ready for prime time, they could use an attack on these sites to provide the death blow to oil and gas, spike oil prices, and spur faster conversion of the gas diesel fleet to electric cars and trucks. I'm sure you and Dr. Farrell can speculate many more high octane, the most appropriate use of the phrase to date. Speculations about this matter. Of course, there's the chance that it's simply a marriage of stupidity and convenience, but I've listened to enough Solarian reports to doubt that. If you would like to pursue this story for a Solarian, would like any more information, or would like to connect with people here in the Permian that have more specific knowledge about the issue, I'm happy to assist. I knew absolutely nothing about this. I find this very interesting. So if anyone has any other knowledge or information about this, please post it at subscriber input or let me know. I do intend to look into it, but right now I'm a blank. It seems like a very dreadful idea. You can't imagine that they would do it, but I will say this. If you look at the push to basically move the Western world to a digital / electric grid and off of oil and gas, it's all part of the, you know, sort of protecting the currency. It's part of the currency war. Then another person says, for your reference, here's the body language expert on the head of the CDC. I watched it again, and it's pretty sick. It's hard to believe these people lie. It's very interesting. I'll never forget watching Attorney General Reno lie about Waco. And it was right after an amazing documentary, published a documentary on Waco that really laid out a lot of the facts that were impossible to refute. And then you watch Attorney General Reno lie and you realize, wow, that's what they're paid for. They're paid to lie. It's amazing. Then there was an article from Naked Capitalism on the economic ramifications of the coronavirus. Then you ask, could the virus also get President Xi out of power? Yes, it could. I don't see that happening based on what's happened to date, but if people get frustrated with the quarantine more widely, it could really have major ramifications. And I suspect that whoever is doing this has pretty good intelligence to kind of sabotage him in the process. Then you say, if Mr. Global is doing this to China, how will China retaliate against the US? There are countless ways, countless. And it's pretty scary because we are seriously codependent on each other. If you haven't read Stephen Roche's book, Unbalanced, I recommend it to you. And then you say, covert wars have been going on for centuries, but this one is the next level. Boy, that's the truth. Okay, next question. Nancy Morgan Hart from Headlines with a Voice did an interesting video on buildup of goods sitting in China's seaports from the country's quarantine. It got me thinking. The string of events that happened in the last 6 months leading up to the virus outbreak, from Mark Carney's speech to Putin making his announcement about the dollar collapsing to the SMB forming a new digital currency to China, getting ready to move away from the dollar, and then the virus happening. Experts predict global supply chain shortage from anywhere to 60 to 90 days because of the virus. Here's what got me thinking. I know this is biowarfare, but by who? If it's the deep state, they've spent 30 years to build up China to be the superpower it is today, what benefit would they get by destroying China's economy? I think Putin's announcement, you've said this yourself, is the most interesting because it's not part of his character to be so disclosing. What would he and Russia get out of making such a statement? It's not like everyone will look to Russia to be the next manufacturing hub or the ruble becoming the next reserve currency. For the last year and a half, there have been talks about the U.S. going into a recession in 2020. 2020 is an election year, and Trump needs the economy to look strong, but could this be his get-out-of-jail-free card by saying, well, it's not my fault an epidemic broke out? My favorite body language expert did a great video on the head of CDC being interviewed on the virus, and she found him to be giddy about the whole thing. She titled the video Weird. He was. The guy was practically jumping for joy. Probably has shares in the company who will produce the vaccine. It's kind of, I should point out, I just sent in a link to the website for news, trends, and stories of the Children's Health Defense did a great article on all the different money the CDC is making from vaccine sales. The conflict of interest is beyond. Aside from the vaccine push, which makes sense for them to do, breaking China seems like it would hurt everyone, especially the U.S., because so many industries have built their businesses around made in China, or maybe this break needed to happen to create a new. Here's the thing, if you look at all the reasons we built up China, things have changed. So we can do a lot of this manufacturing now without massive pollution. So while the manufacturing was going to produce pollution, we essentially exported our pollution to China. That's number one. Number two, we needed massive labor deflation to offset the monetary deflation, but if we can bring out a radically lower energy price, if we can get everything electrified on the digital infrastructure, we don't need that offset anymore. We just need the climate change op to persuade everybody they need to leave fossil fuels. And finally, robotics. with robotics, we don't need all the labor in China. Now, it could be not only a big change, but a horrible, gut-wrenching change. But I think rather than have China literally assert supremacy in the South China Sea or take over Taiwan or bring out the first cryptocurrency, have it be successful, if you look at all the different win-lose positions we were getting in with China, I think that the circumstances, again, pollution, labor deflation, robotics, it changes a great deal. And I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing Trump play the Make America Great Again card. My library is screening this film. Does this tie into your work on Dylan Reed? It's called 13th, a 2016 American documentary. The film explores the intersection of race, justice, and mass incarceration in the United States. The director contends that slavery has been perpetuated since the end of the American Civil War through criminalizing behavior and enabling police to arrest poor freedmen, etc. She examines the prison industrial complex and the emerging detention industrial complex, discussing how much money is being made by corporations from such incarcerations. Sounds to me like it does absolutely dovetail. I haven't seen it, but I'm going to put it on my list, and I really appreciate your bringing that to my attention. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, at subscriber request, Coronavirus with John Rappaport, we talk a lot more about epidemics and the biowarfare and psyops around epidemics than we do talk about the coronavirus. The official reality, the gap between the official reality and reality in this area is so wide, it's hard to fathom. If I hadn't lived through the lies of the 21 trillion missing or the housing bubble or vaccines, I wouldn't, you know, and if I hadn't known John for all the years I've known him and worked with him through story after story, it would be almost impossible for me to fathom the gap. It's so hard to fathom, but you need to hear John on these topics, and he's got great coverage that will really, it's a voice you need to hear when you think about the coronavirus and what's happening. We're also going to publish next week our special Solari report with Mary Holland, wonderful vice chairman and general counsel of the Children's Health Defense, on vaccine mandates. And again, it's very important you stop state vaccine mandates. They are a violation of the Constitution. They are a violation of the Nuremberg Code and principles. We've got to stop it now. And certainly the last thing we need is some major vaccine as a result of the coronavirus. So it's a great 1-2 punch next week. The following week, Bridget Mouchet is back with the Wellness Series. Remember, next week is the last week of the month, no money in markets. I'll be road tripping over to Belgium to see a wonderful, wonderful exhibit that Nina Hein has written about in the Food for the Soul. And keep looking for opportunities to feed your soul. It's so important in this period of change to tap into all the wonderful, glorious things that are happening. Last year we had the Year of Da Vinci. We've got to get the Year of Beethoven started, because this is the 250th anniversary of Beethoven. So find those things that give you joy and build some beauty and joy into your life, because, ladies and gentlemen, we're going up the S-curve, and so please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.